Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markentum.
Hey, and welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast here with Josh and Lucas. We're so excited to have another great show on tap for today. We're doing it a little bit different than we've done it before. We've got a video conference call and a call-in from our guest today that we're really excited about having, Rachel Wonderland. Hey, Rachel, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome, awesome. So Josh is, he's hanging out up in Knoxville and I'm down here in Orlando. And we're doing this a little bit different, but it's going to be a great show. And like I said, so, hey, Josh, man, what's going on up in Knoxville?
Well, today, you're exactly right, Lucas. We're doing it totally different. You and I and also Rachel, who's joining us, are in dramatically different settings. I think Rachel's joining by car. You're in an office suite, and I'm in beautiful Knoxville on the Market Square outside the Oliver. And so if you hear a little background noise, that's what it's all about. But glad to be with you guys and glad to be on Bridge the Gap.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so Rachel, you and I met on Instagram, and your page immediately attracted me, not only because of your colorful hair, but of the content of the stuff that you're putting out. So I immediately gravitated to your YouTube channel and noticed that you are an avid blogger, and you blog about very interesting topics, and especially for me as someone who's a partner to the senior living industry, I'm not necessarily trained on the ins and outs of dementia or aging programs or things of that nature. So I really appreciated your channel because it was highly conversational, highly educational, and you were able to explain different aspects of dementia in a way that I think that the general population could really understand it. So Rachel, tell us a little bit about who you are and your background and what led you to starting a YouTube channel centered around dementia.
Okay, well, I have a master's in gerontology. I wrote the only book on moving somebody to a care community. It's in Barnes & Noble and Amazon, things like that. So it's published by Johns Hopkins. So I'm writing a second book with Johns Hopkins University Press. And this one's gonna be about activities. My background is mostly in assisted living, skilled nursing, personal care, home environment. Although I do and have worked in hospitals and in home care as well. So my expertise is dementia care. I do anything and everything dementia care. I educate, I train staff. I do design, interior design for dementia care, and pretty much anything and everything related to dementia caregiving.
Excellent, excellent. And so you have a website called Dementia by Day, and on your YouTube channel, you have a video that's actually has over 10,000 views here. I have some notes. It's called How to Talk to Someone with Dementia. Tell us a little bit about that video and why you think it's had gained so much attention.
Well, it's animated, so I think that really helps. I wanted to make something that I could post online and have people really tune in for 2 minutes and learn something important. And I think communicating with people with dementia is the hardest thing to teach, especially in 2 minutes. So I got an animator to animate my voice and make a whole little clip on how to talk to people with dementia in like a minute and a half or 2 minutes. So yeah, it did pretty well. It's done pretty well online. I post it again occasionally, but a lot of what I do now is just like 2 minute talk to the camera video, because it's much easier and way less expensive for me to do that.
Excellent, excellent. So like I mentioned, Josh is an operator in senior living and has experience on this topic. So Josh, how important do you think this education to the population is on things like dementia and what that means and what is Alzheimer's and how that impacts our communities?
Yeah, well, it would be an understatement to say it's super important. I love Rachel's approach. I love the aspect that she's using new mediums of communicating. I think that's really important, as many times we've spoken on our show, Lucas, about engaging a younger generation. So I think that's part of what Rachel's more than likely has a great ability to do. I'd be interested to hear her take on that in just a minute. But one of the things, you know, what we know about dementias and Alzheimer's, it seems to be just revolving. And so I think, you know, it's not a topic that we can write a manual on and put it on a shelf and assume that it's not a living, breathing organism, constantly having to be reinvented and updated as we learn. And so I'm so thankful for what Rachel's doing. And you know, Rachel, I'd like to know a little bit of your experience of what's the feedback you're getting. I'm assuming you have some strategic kind of targeted audiences. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and seeing who's embracing the messaging that you're putting out there the most and why you think that is.
So I guess the message is varies depending on who I'm talking to. A lot of who I work with are community living. One of the main things that I teach is like my pet peeve. I hate the phrase dementia and Alzheimer's because people think we're talking about different things. So Alzheimer's is the most common type of dementia. I was actually considering doing an animated video on that as well because a lot of people think that we're talking about like different diseases. And it's really confusing. So dementia is just the umbrella term. And so a lot of what I do at community settings is I teach the basics of like what is dementia, and I go through different types. And then I talk about how to communicate with people with dementia. So a lot of my training is in that I do is in like senior living. I just had a community buy 500 copies of my book, because they're going to be giving it out to all their family members. So anybody who's looking to move somebody into that place will be able to get like a free book, and it'll tell them about how to make that move. So that's really my ultimate goal, honestly, is getting myself in front of as many assisted living communities as possible.
I love that, Rachel, and I love the fact that you seem to be even in our conversation right now, wanting to make it simple and easy to understand. I think a lot of times the literature and the resources that we get, they're very difficult to read. A lot of science, a lot of language, a lot of terms that the average person doesn't understand. So I love that. I would like to kind of go back and talk to, I'm always very intrigued by the why. You know, what was that aha moment back ever, how long ago that was, that you thought, this is what I'm passionate about, needs to be? What's your story that kind of led you to this pathway?
Yeah, I've always loved older people. I've known since I was about 15 that I wanted to work with older adults. And originally, I wanted to be a geriatrician. And when I was in college, I realized I was going to need really good grades in chemistry, and I'm not very good with math, so that was a problem. And I also knew that I wasn't going to be able to spend that much time with people if I was going to be an actual doctor. There's a lot of, like, you know, you see people for 15, 20 minutes, and then you're done, and that's not really what is my skill set. So I went to grad school, got my master's in gerontology, and while I was there, did an internship at Penn Memory Center in Philadelphia and really, really liked it, knew immediately that dementia care was definitely my focus. I just really got into it. My first job out of grad school was running activities and essentially running the floor for a dementia care community in North Carolina. and I loved it. I started writing my blog, and I realized people had, like, the same questions to ask me. Everybody kept asking me the same questions. When do I move my dad, you know? Is my mom going to fit in here? What do I do if grandma stops eating? And everybody had the same questions, and I realized there was no book. There was no manual for them to turn to. So that's why I wrote my first book, as kind of like a guide to help people move somebody into assisted living.
Excellent, excellent. So I'm really glad that you mentioned the topic about the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's, because I actually, that was one of the videos that I watched first of yours, and I had no idea. I didn't even know that. And so you've educated one more person. But there's another video that you have, and I think it may actually be the same video. So it's titled Four Most Common Types of Dementia. Maybe run through that a little bit, and just the impetus of the reason why you think that that's an important topic. Why are people so confused about it?
I think, for one, in that video, I definitely simplify the heck out of it. But I do that on purpose because, you know, if you're a family member taking care of your mom with dementia, you don't need to know, you know, the ins and outs of the protein accumulation happening in her brain. What you need to know is what type of dementia is it, and how to use that knowledge to predict her behavior over time, you know, and to understand how that disease is going to affect her. So I break it down pretty simply, because I think it's important to realize that there are over 70 different types of dementia, and a lot of people just go, oh, it's Alzheimer's, and it's like, well, you know, it very well may not be Alzheimer's disease. We should probably look into what type of dementia is it, because some types of dementia have very different courses than Alzheimer's. Like, you can give yourself dementia from drinking too much. It's called Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome. It's alcoholic-related dementia. You know, there's all these different things. Not everything is just Alzheimer's. So I think it's good to have an idea of potentially what your, you know, loved one has, so you kind of know what to expect to some degree. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And so you've taken your message, so you've written a book, but it seems that you obviously have a unique skill set. Not everyone is good on recording themselves and creating a vlog. It's not for everybody, but you seem to have that skill set. Is that something that you already had that was very natural to you, and you felt like, you know what, I'm going to utilize these social mediums to help, you know, build an audience and help educate? Was that your approach?
Both. I've been an actress of some sort for the past 22 years. So I've been doing film or stage or any type of acting possible probably for the last couple decades. I started out as a film actress, so I was actually in a couple commercials and videos. I had an agent when I was 7. So I was a film actress from ages like 7 to about 18. And then I was always making movies and stuff with my friends as well. So I was always doing something with writing or creating or being in something. And then when I was in college, I joined an improv comedy team. And so I performed regularly with the team for about 4 years. And then I was in graduate school and I was on another improv team. And then I took a hiatus for a couple of years, just like 2 years. And then when I moved up to Pittsburgh, I got on another team. So I've been doing improv here for the last 3 years, and I also do sketch comedy as well. So I do a lot of writing. I'm in a lot of videos. I'm on camera a lot. So making videos kind of just made sense. Somebody recommended it to me at a networking event one time. She said, oh, well, you should make some more of these little clips. They seem to do well. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess so. So probably every, like once every 2 weeks or so, I try to make a little video instead of writing it down. I try to do a video.
Excellent. Well, that makes a lot of sense now that you say that. And so, well, leading up into our another question, I'd love to get Josh's perspective on this as well. But a lot of your videos, especially some of your earlier ones, are really based on teaching and helping people find activities to do with people that are dealing with dementia. Maybe could you talk a little bit about that, and then maybe we can also get Josh's perspective as an operator on how challenging that can be.
Yeah, a lot of people just think that their loved one wants to sit around and watch TV all day because they're like, oh, they don't know what to do with them. So I have a little video or two on it. I work pretty frequently with a woman who owns the company called Memorable Pets. They make pets for people with dementia, stuffed animals for people with dementia. My second book is actually all about activity. So, getting people with dementia to do stuff is super important. I think it usually falls by the wayside. It comes after all the other activities of daily living, but really keeping people engaged and, excited about life and, living life is, I think, actually probably more important than a lot of other things. So I want people to, keep it in the forefront of their head. So I have a Pinterest page that is pretty popular. I don't even really update it very much anymore, but the Pinterest page kind of exists by itself at this point. And it's just a bunch of activities I've done with people with dementia.
So, Rachel, it's interesting that you brought up Memorable Pets. I couldn't help but chuckle a little bit. There wasn't a podcast, a show very long ago that I think I had one of those Memorable Pets on my lap. It was a stuffed cat, and I was petting it, and it was purring at me, and it was so real that my cat allergy almost started reacting just because I had this stuffed animal that was so realistic on my lap. But, I'm curious with your experience, as you shared with us coming up, through, senior housing and activity programming, realizing that we have a growing and broad audience, many of whom are senior living operators. I think we, all face challenges, that I'm sure you've encountered and maybe have some good ideas on when you have a memory care, community or a memory care, part of your community, when you have these residents with these different forms of dementia and they're at different stages of the dementia and they're all responding to our cues and our programming differently, what are some ways that you can individualize activity programming and life programming for those residents without it feeling like, hey, this is one activity. Everybody's got to do the same activity, but how do you really meet people where they are?
I think you need to know who your residents are. I mean, depending on the group, I think having more than one person run activities, a lot of times places have like one activities person. You really need that person to have an assistant. There really should be two people running activities. And there should be different activities. Not everybody's going to like to do the same thing. So throughout the day, having a number of different things happening, including just like time for people to fold socks and sort socks and like arrange flowers and do puzzles and like little simple things that are interspersed like throughout the day that aren't like necessarily planned activities, but rather just like things that people can pull out of boxes and quickly do with the residents between meals and things like that. The main goal is just to keep people busy, keep people busy in a way that it engages them.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the idea that you're not just entertaining, you're actually helping them live life through the activity programming, I think is what I'm hearing you say. So obviously, I mean, I believe in what's going on in our industry is a lot of, what's next? It seems like our industry, when we talk about senior housing, is changing. When we say senior living, and people even debate on whether it's going to be called senior living anymore, put you on the spot here. What are some of the biggest I guess, opportunities that you see with the changing of the population and the growing aging population? What are for senior housing, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges and opportunities that we face?
I think that we're really stuck, the United States is really stuck on this model of assisted living that we've been using for the last, 50 years. And what we need to start doing is we need to start paying more attention to what they're doing in Europe, or places like the Netherlands, who have really advanced types of ways of looking at dementia care. Like, they're actually building little towns for people with dementia. They're not just kind of putting them in a place that looks like the rest of assisted living. Dementia care should not look like assisted living. And this is actually something I teach when I go to a place to do some consulting. And I think I kind of, I scare people because I tell them this. I had a meeting with a group of designers, and they spent so long trying to make this dementia care community look like the rest of assisted living. And that was their goal. And I said, you guys are doing this wrong. And that really surprised them, because they thought that it should look like the rest of assisted living. And I was like, nope. It should feel like a different environment, because it is. People with dementia have different cognitive, emotional, social needs than people who are cognitively aware. So I think that's really important to keep in mind. We need to be looking at what not America is doing if we want to get better at this.
That's excellent. I think that resonates with us. Because we've had, Josh, that sounds like one of our other guests that we've had on before, Amanda Cavallari. It sounds very, very similar to that. And that this type of theme continues to come up. And I think it's coming up for all the right reasons, that if we're going to meet the needs of a very growing population of just not only seniors, but different levels of acuity and dementia, we're going to have to build something that actually fits for them. And I know, Josh, this really resonates with you and your thought process of model as well.
It does. And, Rachel, we, as Lucas alluded to, we've had some guests on that have pointed to the exact same thing that you've said, and which is obviously a belief I have. But, I just think it's fascinating that when you start looking at the models from Europe and other places, one, we don't necessarily feel like we have to reinvent the wheel. There's some great models out there that are working, and lessons that have been learned. But I think it's also interesting, if you really study history, that a lot of the models that are working in Europe, for example, are models of care that were way before the turn of the century. These are not new models of family and household care. And it really is a very cross-functional sector of society that are coming together and saying, we need to care for these people. And, I think, as you mentioned, Rachel, I think we've gotten a little bit siloed in thinking that, we have to have these different sectors, and assisted living has to look like this, and skilled nursing has to look like this, and we have to put everybody in their sector based on their age and acuity. So it's definitely something I'm very passionate about, and appreciate that you brought that up, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that, and especially like with dementia care, I went to this conference once, and this guy didn't know what he was talking about, and he was like, oh, well, I think people with dementia should be able to live in the rest of assisted living, and we shouldn't have locked doors. You need locked doors. You need a special unit for people with dementia. What he was suggesting sounded nice in the quality for everybody kind of way, but it doesn't make sense when it comes to dementia, because he was still looking at it like, oh, well, they're just like everybody else. And they're not. We need to create spaces for them that enhance their cognition, that provide them with a life that fits where their reality is at. And usually their reality is like somewhere else. They're living potentially in a different time than we are. They might think it's 1955. And if they think it's 1955, you know, we can make it look like 1955. Making it look like a really upscale 2018 isn't doing anybody any favors. But I think a lot of people are kind of still stuck on that idea. Like, ah, we'll use nice chairs and chandeliers. And it's like, that's not really dementia friendly.
I would agree with you. And one thing also kind of on a different topic, I would be interested to get your take on this, Rachel, but I think, you know, with the advances in technology, the more that we're learning about dementias and early detection and screening and things like that, I guess we're seeing more early diagnosis of dementia, which is fascinating to me. And recently I had the opportunity on a couple of different occasions to be in roundtable discussions and then also be at a conference where someone with dementia was one of the keynote speakers. Curious to know what you're involved, if you've been involved with some folks like that are kind of speaking into what you're doing and what you're maybe learning from that, and just kind of what your experience and take on that is.
On like how it is, so, you know, different over time, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ask me that again.
Yeah, so just what do you think it's doing now that we have the early detection with technology and research? And now you actually have people with dementia that are talking about it, whereas before, you know,
I think
people didn't find out they had dementia until there was such a deficit.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really good that we're kind of addressing it as it's coming up instead of kind of letting it, you know, be a longer period of time. I think early detection is good, and people need detection as a way to plan ahead. A lot of people just hear, you know, they get the early diagnosis and then panic. They go, well, early stages, yes, we're in trouble. But really, they should be using that time to go, like, let's create a living will. Let's make sure someone has a power of attorney. Let's, you know, make a decision about where, you know, we can move you. Like, so that people are involved in the decision-making process. And it's not all emotionally driven, because that usually becomes an issue. And it'll be like a scramble at the last minute. Like somebody, like there's no power of attorney. And dad's going to the bank and taking out large sums of money, you know, because he doesn't understand how money works anymore. You know, and it's like that time is of the essence, you know, and to use it wisely to not only enjoy life, but to plan, you know, plan ahead, like get your finances together.
Absolutely. Well, Rachel, this has been a fascinating conversation with you. And one of the things that we talk about toward the end of all of our shows is that we never really want the conversation to end once the show is over. And so we're going to make sure that in our show notes that we connect with you, and then we put this back out on our social channels. So Rachel, tell our listeners, just what's next for you on your agenda? What are you excited about that's upcoming? Maybe I think you mentioned your book, but then also how can they connect with you to engage more, to ask you questions and get involved in what you're doing?
Well, I'm going to Hawaii in a couple of weeks to consult with a company, assisted living company out there. So that's pretty cool. I would say people can get on my blog and ask me questions, but really I have a phone call service where people can call, talk to me for an hour and ask me as many questions as they want. And they can do that from my website, rachelwonderland.com. Even if they go to dementiabyday.com, you can find a link for that as well. But yeah, there's a lot of different ways to get in touch with me. And you know, for people who have questions about dementia, happy to help.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, Josh, and it looks like sunny Knoxville on a crowded street there. Looks like a great afternoon out there. This has been a lot of fun to have this conversation. I think it's so important. And Rachel, you have two new fans of what you are doing. So we'll definitely be following up with you and following your activities closely. Safe travels out to Hawaii, and best of luck. We're going to be rooting for you. Thank you so much to all of our listeners for another great episode with Josh and Lucas here on Bridge the Gap.